Welcome to today's episode of Two and a Half Beards Podcast. Today we're going to be talking about all things Utah State football. We're going to discuss the last game against USC and talk about how that went. And talk a little bit about the upcoming opponent in Arkansas State. After a little bit, we're going to talk about some Aggie soccer and volleyball. They both got big matches coming up. And about halfway through the program, we'll get into some national sports, talk football and NFL towards the end. First, I'd like to introduce this program to you. We are Two and a Half Beards Podcast, aptly named because of Trevor here, who has a beard and a half, Daniel, who has one beard, and I, who have stubble. I don't think that counts towards anything. But I'm going to let these guys introduce themselves real quick.
Hi, I'm Trevor, and I do play-by-play for the Mountain West Network for girls sports. I also do men's and women's rugby for the Statesman, and obviously this podcast.
I'm Daniel Hansen. I cover national sports for the Statesman. Do whatever else can come my way as well. You can follow me on Twitter at TheGrandDanny as well.
And my name's Jaden Johnson. I just barely got into the whole covering sports thing, but I'm going to be covering the volleyball beat for the Utah Statesman, and you can find me on Twitter at Jaden the Jedi. So the first thing we want to talk about here today is Utah State's massacre last week. What happened?
Oh, well, we got massacred, first of all. Just not a whole lot went right after the coin toss. We hung with them for a couple minutes, but I mean, that block punt just kind of derailed everything. We just kind of went downhill from there.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think our first defensive stand was actually pretty good, and then the offense started off, you know, a little bit good, and then we had a penalty right off the bat, which kind of hurt us, and so we had to go for the punt and decided we want to block the guy out and blocked it, and they got a pretty much touchdown after
that. I feel like when you're going up against a team like USC, a nationally storied program, a team that gets, I don't know what their recruiting class is ranked, but they got to be top 10, top 15 in the country every year for recruiting. You can't come out to a bad start like that. You can't give up a punt return for a touchdown. You can't make the stupid mistakes that they did and expect to win the game or even be in it. And I think that was where the biggest difference was.
I think there's that, but then also you kind of think of all the injuries we had too. I mean, Devontae Mays had that knee injury halfway through the game. Daniel Gray, of course. I mean, that changed the entire game plan for the secondary.
But think about how they looked before that, you know?
It was pretty bad before that, but I mean, we were at least playing them a little bit tougher. I mean, up until that Daniel Gray injury, the blocked punt was pretty much the difference in the game. After that, we just did not have as much talent on corners to really deal with, like, Juju Smith-Schuster and all the athletes that USC does have.
I'll say this. I think that was the difference on paper. I think on the field, there was a much bigger difference than that. Just watching Utah State on their first few drives, you could tell there was a talent differential, and you could tell that there was something lacking from, I don't know if it was from the game plan, I don't know if it was effort. There was a big differential beyond just injuries and beyond the blocked punt and the big mistakes, I think.
One question I have is, after Utah State leads the nation in rushing for the first week, and Devontae Mays has a great game also there against Weber State, why do we only have 11 attempts of rushing in the first half?
I think part of it goes back to we're already down. I mean, rushing would have been great if we were able to hold them to 0-0 for the first quarter. I think the first quarter is really, it's imperative to keep it in a close game if you're trying to pull the upset. I mean, we just had to kind of abandon our game plan a little bit after being down 7-0, then 14-0, then 21-0. It just kind of threw a wrench into all the plans that we had for that.
I'd agree with that.
Well, I believe 7-0 in the first quarter, you shouldn't really abandon it too much, because, you know, if you keep your plan to how you went in there with down seven, you know, you kind of put into being down seven, you know, sometimes. So it's not really, that shouldn't have really stopped us from keeping running, and it would have us have more time of possession to keep the defense off the field longer and actually be able to rest rather than going in three and out and having them off for only 30 seconds and coming right back on.
I understand that a little bit, but it's also, you look at kind of USC and what, like, their strength has been so far this year. You look at their Alabama game, they were dreadful in most facets. But if you take out like that 73-yarder Alabama had, they actually played the running game pretty well. They stopped the run, even Alabama's running game, which, let's be honest, is probably better than Utah State's. They were able to stop that. Even in the game, when we did rush, we didn't have a ton of success with that. I think Matt Wells kind of understood that and kind of thought
I think that's we an kind understatement. Of need to. We, I mean, all around, we had 49 rushing yards the entire game. That's pitiful. You have to understand, I mean, they are a much bigger team, and a lot of times when you're playing bigger, stronger, faster teams, you do have to deviate a little bit, and you have to rely a little bit more on the passing. To me, the biggest disappointment, though, was that they just kept going back at it with the screens, with the short little passes behind the line of scrimmage that weren't getting them anywhere. And against a team like Weber State, no offense to Weber State, or against a team that doesn't have nearly as quick of athletes, nearly as good of athletes, those little screen passes will work, even one after the other, because you're the better team and you're faster and you're better at executing plays like that.
But Weber State doesn't have a Dory Jackson.
But Weber State doesn't have a Dory Jackson, exactly. And you try that against USC, especially one after the other, which you watch almost every third down was some sort of a screenplay or a short pass, right, you know, 5 yards short of the line of scrimmage. Those aren't going to get you anywhere. And so I was very disappointed by the play calling throughout most of the game. And in the end, you saw once we finally got that touchdown, that came as a result of longer passes down the field, hitting people down the center and making big plays. I don't know, had we done that throughout the entire game, if that would have changed a thing. It might have got us another few touchdowns on the board. Maybe not. I don't think it would have impacted the result, though.
I could probably agree with that. That's one thing I do wish USC would do a little bit more of, is kind of have a downfield passing attack, which is going to be kind of the weakness this year. We don't have Hunter Sharp anymore. Devontae Robinson's also gone. I mean, we're relying on true freshman Rashad Lewis to pretty much be the leader of the receiving core. And, I mean, there are good players there. I mean, you still got Andrew Rodriguez. You got a Byers. But none of them are really proven. None of them are really sure-handed. And they don't scare the defense.
This is going to be a hard question, I think. What positives can we take away from this game?
Our uniforms look nice. We got paid like $1.2 million for this game.
those are positives.
Those are very good positives.
Well, once we did get going a little bit, you know, actually throwing some more deeper passes rather than just doing bubble screens, we were able to run it a little bit more, have a couple good runs after that. But when we just, you know, we eventually did be able to throw the ball a little bit. And, you know, I think Lewis showed a little bit that he can do that. And then also, you know, there was times that the defense did pretty well. It's just that if they're in there, they go in there and make a good stop, and then they're out, right back out there in 30 seconds to a minute because of three and out, then, you know, it's you're just going to lose all your energy, and it's just going to get harder and harder.
I will say this about the game. It was definitely better for us to have all these weaknesses show up here in the second game of the season against USC than later on in conference play against, like, Boise State or San Diego State.
Agreed.
Now we have several weeks of practice. We have Arkansas State next week, which will be a much easier game, hopefully, where we'll be able to kind of look, okay, this is what went wrong. This is the things that did go well. Here's where we can improve. And hopefully that makes us a better team and it makes us so we're competitive in conference play and hopefully can get a conference championship at the end of the year.
I think that any time you go and you play a big-time team, you know, a few years ago when we played Tennessee and a few years ago when we played Wisconsin, Auburn, I think that those kind of games, beyond just getting us a nice little paycheck for going out there and playing them, I think that it gets very valuable experience for the players. It's not, you know, of course we're not going to be playing that type of caliber of team every single week in and week out, but just going and putting ourselves up with a measuring stick to that team and really having to play above our usual level to even stay in the game. Not that we did that this time, but I think that just that experience is very valuable to the team. And then going next week to play a team like Arkansas State, again, nothing against Arkansas State. They're clearly not a USC caliber team. It's going to make that game so much easier for the team, and I think it'll prepare them much better.
Also, on a big picture thing, you look at the past years, we still have not gotten that marquee Power 5 win that we've been looking for since Gary Anderson was on the staff. And you kind of wonder, like, why does Utah State keep getting these games with, like, Tennessee, Oklahoma, USC? And we talk a little bit more about this with basketball, I think. But that's a really good recruiting advantage when you can say, hey, once a year, so you're going to go and play against some of the best talent that the NCAA has. You're going to play against USC. You can show what you have. And that's going to help you a lot more to improve as a player, to get recognized by NFL scouts as well. So it's a really good benefit, I think, there as well, when we're able to say, we can go play these big Power 5 teams.
Well, and you know what? Had we been able to hang in there, as we have in previous years, that's enormous for national attention. I was down, Daniel was with me, this last January. We were down in the deep south, down in Alabama. And I remember specifically talking to somebody we were in Georgia at the time, but talking to somebody at the Atlanta, Georgia airport who saw me wearing a Utah State shirt, said, hey, you guys are the team that almost beat Auburn a few years ago.
Don't bring that game up.
He wasn't very happy about it. But that's how he knew Utah State, as the team that almost beat Auburn. Imagine had that been the team that beat Auburn, that would have been so much better. But I think it's worth it to take the chance to go play USC. Next year we're going up to Wisconsin again, and if the team were able to show up there and really, really pull something out, it'd be enormous.
You know, so next year with that Wisconsin game, we probably won't be losing like 90% of our defense and only having three return. I think we'll have more returners for that to help.
No doubt.
Yeah, plus, I mean, you look at this year, like the difference makers we got right now. I mean, Rashad Lewis, you got Lecky on the defensive side. We got a lot of underclassmen that are playing some pretty big minutes right now and actually doing really well, which bodes very well for the program later on, just to improve and actually get that Power 5 marquee win.
I think that even though that game was not pretty, it was the exact opposite of pretty. And there's a lot of Utah State fans really down on it right now. It was one game. It was a non-conference game. It's not going to affect us in the Mountain West. We've still got the entire Mountain West schedule ahead of us, and that's what really matters for the team. And we've got a bright future. You know, I think there's a lot of positives to look at looking forward from that game. So on that note, we've got Arkansas State coming up this week. I'd be lying if I said I knew much about Arkansas State other than what I've read about their last couple of games, which is them getting killed by Auburn, who's a good team. Auburn beat them this past week, but
Toledo beat them the week before.
Toledo's not a bad team either. Well. But I feel like this is a game that the Aggies should win. What are you expecting from the game?
I'm expecting, since we are at home, it will be a little bit, you know, easier for them to win, because always a home game is always a little easier than a road game. We got the advantage of altitude. Also, the fans. But what's going to be good is they're not going to be as fast and as deep as USC. So they're a little bit more down to our level to see how we are against teams that are supposed to be around our level in competition.
Yeah, the one thing I know about Arkansas State, or one of them at least, is they've been just pretty much a coaching carousel the past couple of years. They've gone through like three or four head coaches in about 3 or 4 years. They've gone like past couple of years like 11-2, 10-3 each year, and then immediately that coach just gets hired off somewhere else to a larger program. And I think that's finally started to catch up with them. I mean, there's only so much turnover that you can experience on that level before the talent on the field kind of takes a hit. And that's kind of this year. This is kind of a rebuilding year for them. So, I mean, it's a good rebound game, I think, after the USC showing that we had.
But also, how hard is it really to go 11-2 in the Sun Belt, though?
When I was a kid, I thought Sun Belt just applied to that, like, granola maker. So it's not that hard to go 10-2 in the Sun Belt.
Well, people thought the same things about when we played Arkansas State, what was it, two, three years ago. And they came up here and beat us.
We were down.
I'm sorry. It was there. You're correct. It was there. But everyone thought we were having a pretty good season to that point. Everyone thought that Utah State would walk out of there with a win, no problem. I don't know how this year's Arkansas State team compares to that year.
It doesn't.
I'd imagine that just looking at how they've done this year, I'd imagine that they were quite a bit better then. But you can't take any game for granted, and I think the team knows that. I don't think that's going to be a problem. But I would expect the Aggies pull this out, but not by a large margin.
I'm going to think that we're going to come in this a little bit with a little bit more revenge than we have in other games, because there's still a lot of players on this team that remember that 2014 game, and it was a bit of a letdown. I think Utah State will come out with a little bit more fire, a lot more energy, and I think they will show that they are the more talented team as well. So I would say I would put 2 touchdowns probably as the deficit, but I think it could even be more than that. I think we could see the running game get back to that level that they had at Weber State.
They're also not playing a quarterback that used to practice against the defense all the time. Like that last time, the quarterback was Adam Kennedy, which had just recently played for Utah State, and so he knew a little bit about how they were run and how they played, which helps. You know, usually that can be a boost up. And
it's true. I actually forgot Adam Kennedy went there. Yeah, that's true. So right now on the line, Utah State is favored by, what is it, 9 points? So,
yes.
Hopefully this is a good game. I think that the students are going to turn out really well. It's the big whiteout of the year. And I feel like there's going to be really good home support. Still, the new stadium, and people turned out really well for Weber State. I don't think that USC will really take a hit on attendance. So hopefully the crowd's fired up and ready to go, and the team comes out with a little bit of a chip on their shoulders. So in other news of Aggie Sports is awesome right now. Can I just say, I mean, we've got a lot of really good teams right now. Everything seems to be going the Aggies' way. We've had the A lit up almost every day this week, it seems like.
A beautiful sight.
Beautiful sight. Last night as we're camping out for football tickets, I looked up and saw a blue A. So it was yesterday, Sunday, the Utah State soccer team just went and tore into Sam Houston State. What do we take away from a win like that?
Well, in soccer, it doesn't matter, really. You can have a good playing against a horrible team and still only get one or two goals to win that game. But if scoring 8-0 in soccer, that's like almost 120-0 in football. It's
even against an FCS opponent, that's still remarkable.
And you also think it was 8-0 at the half. Like, they scored all 8 goals in 45 minutes of play. And
that's why I do in FIFA against you.
I hardly get 8 goals in all of FIFA. So
not when you're playing me.
Okay, yeah, I'm playing you, I get 16. But but like, shout out like Alicia Robinson. Like, I was looking at my Twitter, like watching football for this, and I just kept
seeing
goals.
As most of us, I think, were. I'm not going to claim I was there.
Yeah, understandably so. It was the first week of NFL. We'll get to that later. But it was just like tweet after tweet, like Utah State's up 3-0, 4-0. And all of a sudden, Alicia Robinson just went off for like 3 goals in like, it seemed like 10 minutes. It was an impressive showing. I don't care who the opponent was.
It's Sam Houston State. I should note, on the year, they are 0-8 to this point. You got to feel a little bit bad for a team like that. But Utah State going in this week, they've got on Saturday, they've got a big match against BYU. That'd be awesome for everyone to show out. They're trying to break the attendance record for a soccer match. I don't know what the attendance record currently is. I think they just set it against Utah a few weeks ago, and they're trying to break that record again. First 100 students get a free hat or sunglasses or something, I saw. So that's, again, that's this Saturday at you have a time, 4 o'clock?
I 4 believe. O'clock, I 4 think.
4 o'clock.
Yeah. And tennis has been great for soccer so far, but they're wanting to continue to increase that. And rightfully so. If you beat a team 8-0, people better come out to
and come on,
that.
We're playing BYU. Anytime we have a chance to get one against BYU, that's a huge opportunity. They've done pretty well this year. BYU is, I believe they're 6-2 on the season or something close to that. They're a pretty solid team, 5-1. So hopefully everyone can make it out to that. It should be a good match. Other news in Aggie sports, the volleyball team, they just concluded their USU Invitational Tournament, which is every year they host a little home tournament right before they start conference play. For those of you who follow the USU volleyball team, last year they had a pretty rough season. They won something like 6 games throughout the whole season. This year they've already almost matched that. They've already got 4 wins on the season. They did really well in the tournament. They came out, started out hot against Cal Riverside, and in the second match against Portland State, Portland State's a very good team. They started out up 2-0 and ended up losing in 5. So, and then they pulled off 1 the last day against Southeastern Louisiana. So they got a lot of good things going on there with the volleyball team. They got a few weeks till they're going to be back at home again, but this week they're playing at Weber State. I'm sorry, at Utah Valley and at Utah. So that's a good team to watch, a good team to keep tabs on. I think that they're really going to make some damage in the Mountain West this year, which is a very, very good volleyball conference.
Also during that tournament, Hannah Gleason, the libero, set a record for the most aces in a match, and she also got on the top for career aces or career digs, I believe.
She's number 4 in career digs, yep, in Utah State history, which is, yep, huge. Huge. Utah State, I don't know if you guys know this, and I didn't know this before I started covering the team. Utah State has a national championship in women's volleyball.
When?
I believe it was 72.
Was it 72?
I know it was in the 70s. I think it was
a long dang time ago. But Utah State does have a national championship in women's volleyball.
Learn something new every day.
Learn something new every day. And those matches are a lot of fun. So, moving on from that, I know, Trevor, you're a huge Real Salt Lake fan. And right now the MLS playoff race is heating up. Real Salt Lake has done pretty well over the last few matches. Is Real Salt Lake going to make the playoffs?
I believe they will. Right now they have 5 games left. They have their magic number to make the playoffs is 10 points. So that should be doable, because that, you know, also by other teams losing and not getting points can add, you know, take points off for that 10 points. Their last 4 games, it was pretty good. We played the first three of those games. They played the number 1, 2, and 3 in the West and took 7 points out of that, 2 wins and a draw. This last game they played, it was kind of down. They were playing on turf, which, you know, none of them like. So they played against Portland and lost that 1-0. So and Portland's kind of playing on the limb. They need to win, or they might be getting out of the playoffs, because they're on the 6th spot right now, which is the final spot.
I'm looking at the standings right now for the MLS, and 2, looking at the schedule. They're only 5 points out of first place. While they are in 5th right now, they're 5 points. I'm sorry, I did the math wrong. They're 7 points out of first place. I was looking at the wrong team on the table. But 7 points out of first place, that's, you know, within 3-4 matches, they have an opportunity to jump up there if everything goes their way.
And they do play the person up top one more time.
FC Dallas, who is on top of the table. Yes. So, I mean, at very least, they have an opportunity to climb up to number 2 or 3.
So here's a question then with that.
Sure.
If you're a betting man, do you place a bet on RSL to win the MLS Cup this year? Is that a smart thing to do?
You know, it's hard to say. It's been somewhat of an up and down season, I feel like, for the team, and with injuries, with suspensions, with all kinds of things, you never know. Soccer, I feel like it's a very difficult sport to place a bet on, at least in my opinion. What do you think, Trevor?
That's kind of how I think, because but when Utah, when the RSL does get their top 11 in, they can compete with the best, but you know sometimes they decide they need to rest a few guys, you know, then there's suspensions in their injuries, and sometimes when they do that, they kind of don't play like they really could, because you know sometimes they believe that, oh, I'm not playing with my, you know, my right hand man over this guy, and so it kind of takes them down a little bit. But if they're playing that they're top 11, they have competed with the best, and they could do it. But with the way the MLS playoffs are, it just, you know, you have two games, a home and away, and you have one bad game on those, it could you know, ruin everything.
I will say this though, I think that Real Salt Lake, when matched up against nearly any team in the league, when healthy and free of suspension, or at least free of any major suspension or major injury, I feel like Real Salt Lake can compete with absolutely anybody. They have a very solid starting lineup. They have a very solid team. And so I will not be surprised if they do make a deep playoff run this year. Championship, we'll see. I wouldn't put money on it, but we'll see. Either way, it's worth watching them, though, especially right now where the playoff race is so close. It's worth watching to see what happens, and I guess we'll find out. Real Salt Lake, they're one of the only major sports championship we have here in the last how many years? So
I think like ever. I don't know if Utah Jazz haven't won.
Utah Stars won.
Didn't we have a WNBA team for a while? I don't know if they were.
They did. They did not win anything. That's why they're gone.
Yeah, figures. So baseball's going on right now, and baseball's been going on for a long time. But right now, they're coming into the home stretch towards the playoffs. And I'd be lying if I said I'm a baseball guy. I have a very hard time following with 80-something games?
162
games.
Plus playoffs, plus preseason.
So I have a very hard time following baseball, but I do love playoff baseball, and I know it's coming up, and right now they've got, another month or so of the regular season. So, and I understand that the race is really close, so why should I be watching, and what's going on?
Well, I've been actually watching this race pretty much since the season started. It's been an incredible year. I mean, we've got, first of all, Chicago Cubs are seriously one of the greater teams that we've seen over the past couple of decades. They've just been amazing. And then you've got like the Nationals, you've got other great teams, which in any other year, we'd be talking about them as a really terrific team. But because of the Cubs, they've kind of taken a back burner. But then you've got like the wild card races are just nuts in both leagues. You've got four or five teams jostling just for those last two positions. You've got four teams in the AL East alone that are still trying to win the division crown. It's just going to be just a straight race to the finish for this last like 20 games or so.
And that is, for me, baseball is only interesting when there's something on the line. Because with 162 games, you could lose a game and not even lose any sleep about it because you got one later that afternoon. You know? But when it actually comes down to the stretch and when playoffs are happening and when every game is actually important, that's when baseball is really interesting to me. So it's good to hear.
Yeah, with the way it looks right now is the National League's pretty much, you know, there's three people competing for it. You know, maybe actually about four actually in the mix in it. But I think what looks more fun to watch is the American League race, because there's six teams within four games, with about 16 left, so I think that's a better race to watch than the National League.
Yeah, and there's just a lot of star power all throughout it. I mean, you've got, of course, the big names, Bryce Harper, Chris Bryant, but all the wildcard teams except like St. Louis, who is just a bunch of no names every single year. You've got all these wonderful talents. You got Alex Bregman in Houston with Carlos Correa. You've got Xander Bogaerts out in Boston. You've just got all these great players. You just know there's going to be some special performances just to watch in these last couple of games. So
give it to me straight. How are the Padres going to do?
They are going to get a nice draft pick.
Yeah, they are already eliminated, pretty much.
Yeah, I'm just messing around. That's awesome. I mean, playoff baseball is the best. Everyone loves playoff baseball, right?
Yeah, but let's be honest. Everyone wants football right now.
That's exactly. I have a hard time thinking too much about baseball when we just had one of the greatest weeks of NFL and two of the greatest weeks of college football. I was thinking that this Saturday of college football was going to stink. There was not much that looked exciting or even worth watching, but what a week it was. There was a lot of upsets.
Yeah, it was really surprising just kind of see who underperformed in some places. You even had, like, Alabama had a kind of a shaky performance against, I think, Western Kentucky. Georgia almost lost to Nicholls State, but then you actually had some people pull it off. Like, of course, Central Michigan kind of beat Oklahoma State. Yeah. A little debatable there.
So going along with that Chippewa, do you think they should make an actual rule where, like, if they can actually go back and if change that play, that if it, no matter what, it's not going to do anything else to the end of the game, and say, hey, well, you know, we're going to take that back and take that win? Because, like, just like last year with Duke when they were doing that toss back and the laterals, and then one of the knees hits, but they didn't see it in time, and they gave them the win. But if they would have, if they saw that knee even afterwards and took that touchdown away, it wouldn't have, the only thing, it wouldn't have changed the plays anything after that, because there was no time left.
Yeah, that's an interesting topic. I am under the opinion that if you're going to have instant replay, everything should be challengeable. That's what I feel like. And if there is something that clearly went wrong on a play and was clearly called wrong, you got a video evidence right there to prove it. So why not take it back? I know that there's a lot of people that feel otherwise, but that's how I've always felt about instant replay.
That's kind of the position I take too. And then, I mean, you've got all these calls that just get, people just get wrong every single week. We see it every week, a judgment call or some sort of, even just like the Miami Duke game last year, or Central Michigan, where they just get the rules mixed up and they just kind of lose. I'm losing my words here. Someone else.
And you know, I guess it does take the human element out of sports in a sense, but no official is perfect, and maybe sports shouldn't be perfect. But I feel like that in a situation like that where it's costing Oklahoma State, not that I feel like they were ever really in a contention picture, but I mean, they were the number 22 team in the country, and a loss to Central Michigan, to the Central Michigan Chippewas, that's going to take them out of any contention that they had for the rest of the season. I mean, I guess they're still in their conference contention, but that's a huge loss based on something that really shouldn't have even happened. So I mean, congratulations to Central Michigan. That's awesome, and that was one of the most entertaining finishes I've seen in a long, long time. But it shouldn't have been.
So a question on that I've seen floating around with people is when the playoff committee meets later in the season and kind of decide, well, who's going to be in, who's going to be out, should they treat this game for Oklahoma State, should they treat it as a win since they were kind of robbed?
I don't think so.
I think if they're close enough, if they're you know, they're fairly close to the thinking on who would be in that top four, if they're fairly close to the person that's number four and they're number five, maybe they might take that into effect. But if it's, like, you know, way off there and you're like they're six or seven or eight anyways because of future, then I don't think they should. But if they're number five, you know, take a look at number four and kind of take that into effect.
Let me just say this. If this was a loss to Oklahoma, if this was a loss to Alabama or to a high team, I think that would have a little bit more bearing. But they lost to Central Michigan, and I don't think that any team that loses to Central Michigan has any place in a college football playoff anyway. So I personally feel like Oklahoma State has quite a few more losses ahead of them, and they're not even going to sniff the top 25 at the end of the year. We'll see about that. But I think it's a bit of an irrelevant question, but interesting nonetheless. Were you guys able to catch the Mountain West games late at night with Boise State and Washington State and with San Diego State, California?
I was kind of grueling to stay up like till 1 a.m. for that Hawaii game, but I caught most of them.
It was awesome. There was some good finishes there. I'm really excited about Mountain West football this year because both those teams pulled off wins. I mean, of course, Washington State, they're a Pac-12 team, but they're not a national powerhouse or anything like that. But, you know, to get a win over a Pac-12 team is always good. And Boise State, I thought they looked overall pretty good until they just about choked up the lead at the end. But they came out on top. That's all that matters. And San Diego State, I thought, just looked very solid against California. They've got that. They got Donnell Pumphrey, who is unbelievable. He broke Marshall Faulk's school rushing record. And I'm really excited for the game when San Diego State comes up here to Utah State, and we get to watch him in person. I'm excited to watch him, but I'm scared.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good thoughts right there, and I believe that also. You know, I think Pumphrey could be a first, second round for sure.
No doubt.
Round pick when he comes to
he
that.
He should. I absolutely think he should.
Yeah, he was running all over that Cal defense, and it's just not right there. Broke Marshall Faulk's record for yardage at San Diego State. Oh, did you already say that? Okay. Let's repeat that, because that's just awesome. Marshall Faulk is a Hall of Famer, and this guy just absolutely smashed his yardage record in the second game of the season with 10 games to go. So let's think that in. Let that sink in on just how good this guy is.
So here's a big question for you that I've seen floating around all over the Twitterverse and the interwebs. Can Houston make the playoff? Is it possible that a group of five team in today's college football layout could make the playoff?
I think they would have to win the rest of their games and have them be dominant wins. If they have a close win, depending on who the team is, you know, if it's against a ranked team at the time, maybe that'd be okay. But if they're just a regular team from the ACC or the AAC.
AAC. I hate that.
But from the AAC, and it's a close win, a barely win at the end.
Say they barely win over Tulsa.
Then they barely went over Tulsa. I don't think they have a shot. But they'd have to pretty much, you know, kill everybody in the rest of their schedule to have a shot.
I think they have a shot even if they do win some close games, mainly because the playoff isn't going to be based on polls, really. I mean, it's based off the playoff polls from the committee. But you're going to see over the next couple weeks after, like, Alabama beats some SEC teams or Ohio State beats Oklahoma this week or something, those teams will start to climb up Houston because people will look, the pollsters will look at Houston and say, they just beat Tulsa or they beat UConn. Meanwhile, all these other teams are playing a terrific Big Ten schedule. I think the committee is going to look a little bit closer at Houston, though, because of how well they dominated Oklahoma and the way that I think they'll dominate the AAC.
I feel like if any team has ever had an opportunity to do it, it's Houston, because they started out after the first poll. What, they were number four? Is that right? Number three or number four?
Preseason,
the first. After week one poll, though, they were number four, I believe, and now they're number six because there was some other really big games and teams that probably made it worth climbing up. But it's a very good team, and beating Oklahoma, who is a very good team, is huge. I think a lot of it could depend on how Oklahoma does the rest of the year. If Oklahoma proves to be a scrub, which I don't believe is going to be the case. If Oklahoma goes out and only wins six games this year, yeah, they'll probably take a bit of merit away from them. But if they win out, I don't think that you could possibly hold them out of the playoff this year. A team that's number six in week two, if they win and continue to win, how can you keep that team out?
I think one thing to look at as well is going to be Greg Ward Jr. I mean, their quarterback.
He's awesome.
He's awesome. His Heisman race, I think, will go parallel with how well Houston is competing for the playoff. If Ward puts up insane numbers for the rest of the season and people are talking about, hey, let's get him to like the Heisman ceremony and stuff, I think Houston will stay in the conversation for the playoff there. If Ward kind of tails off, even if Houston keeps winning a little bit, I think that's going to kind of drag them down a little bit as well, unless Ward is this like deity of a quarterback that he showed in that Oklahoma game.
I think America's pulling for him. America loves an underdog. I don't think the playoff committee loves an underdog. I guess we'll find out. But
so you think if Houston does leave, does lose a game, do you think they're at any chance of any other non-Power 5 conference of making that number four spot?
I would say no.
I would say the only shot that we have on that is if San Diego State and Boise State run the table and then meet in the conference championship.
Do they play each other in regular season?
I believe they do. I'll pull that up. I believe that they do. I think they would take that along with having a year like last year where you've got two lost teams in the playoffs. I think it would take some of the SEC teams to lose a couple and really not have four super dominant up and above the rest teams, like similar to last year. But I think that the odds are so slim of a team like Boise or San Diego State getting in, where at this point they're still not even in the top 25. I just don't see it.
They are receiving votes, and I'm looking at their schedule now. They do not play in regular season.
Okay.
So if they do meet, it will be conference championship. If they're undefeated, I think the winner that could get into the playoff. Other stuff does have to happen. I mean, they're not going to put in – I don't think they'll put in an undefeated Mountain West champion over like a one-loss ACC team or like a one-loss Notre Dame or something like that. But if it's like everyone else murders each other and there's an undefeated Boise State team left – I could see them getting the playoff.
What if Louisville to be the one that beats Houston? What would you think about that?
Louisville's an interesting story. I think if Louisville beat Houston, I think Houston would be out of contention. But Louisville could be a dark horse at this point in the season. I get it's still really early. Louisville, I would not be surprised to see them at some point during this season being talked about as a playoff contender. But in order for that to be the case, they're going to have to win a huge game this week against Florida State.
That is true. They got a big break. One of Florida State's top defenders I saw is ruled out for the game. That's still going to be a real tough game for them to actually win. I think
it is in Louisville.
It is in Louisville, so they do have a home field advantage there. But, I mean, Jimbo Fisher's had a really good program down there at Florida State.
Oh, of course.
And he's going to bring it. They've got playoff aspirations themselves. They're not gonna withhold any punches. So, I'd love for Louisville to do it, but I'm not sure if they can last that, and also Clemson in a couple weeks.
I don't know. Lamar Jackson is amazing. At least he has been to this point in the season. I get they haven't had the toughest competition, but a man getting 8 touchdowns in the first half of a game—that's unheard of. And then he was very, very good in the last game, too. I think that we're going to see what Louisville's made of this weekend. I don't think that they're going to win. I really don't. I don't think that they are an all-around team as much as Florida State is. I feel like Florida State's offense is going to go just nuts on their defense. Syracuse put up a number on Louisville, and think about how much better Florida State is than Syracuse. So we'll see how it goes, but I personally, I think that they're going to lose pretty handily. If Louisville does win, though, they have to be in every playoff conversation at this point.
I could agree with that. I also think this game kind of decides the Heisman front runner at this point in the season. It'll be Lamar Jackson if they win, Dalvin Cook if Florida State wins. And then you still got, of course, like Christian McCaffrey and Deshaun Watson still out there. But this weekend in general is just going to be a really good standard for the rest of the playoff, for the playoff race for the season. You've got that game. You've got Oklahoma and Ohio State going on. You've got a couple marquee matchups this week where we're really going to discover what these teams are. You can kind of think that week one win maybe might have been a fluke. But if you're able to post 2 marquee wins early in the season, we know you're legit, and that's when playoff aspirations can really kind of take a good hold.
Well, and I will say this, Florida State, I watched their first game and they were a little bit of a Jekyll and Hyde team, because in the first half they looked terrible. Everyone on Twitter, everyone, the announcers of the game, they were almost writing Florida State out of contention at that point just because they looked so bad in that first half against Ole Miss. I don't think that'll happen again. And they did look very good in the second half and came back and won that game against a solid Ole Miss team. But if Louisville gets that team that was in the first half, I think they win.
Vegas only has Florida State at a two-point disadvantage, or at -2, so it's Vegas is, you know, sometimes they're pretty on. You know, it should be a good game.
I agree. I'm excited. That's for me, that's the game of the week. But, of course, we've also got Ohio State-Oklahoma. That's enormous for every playoff implication. We haven't seen anything. We haven't seen Ohio State play anybody yet, and so that's going to be it'll be fun to see how they come out and play against Oklahoma. We'll find out if Oklahoma is the team that they looked like when they played against Houston, or if they're much better.
That game is in Oklahoma, too.
It is in Oklahoma.
And if Oklahoma loses that, I think Big 12 is out of the playoff picture entirely. I don't think Texas or Baylor can really run the table, and I think TCU lost their aspirations this last week. So
agreed. And then we've also got Alabama Ole Miss, which is could be a huge game as far as SEC standings go. I think everyone is kind of expecting Alabama to run away with that, but you never know.
Ole Miss has won the past 2 years, so
I like Ole Miss. I like Chad Kelly a lot. I like Ole Miss, and I don't like them to win the game, but I like Ole Miss, and we'll see what they do. And then also Michigan State, Notre Dame. So it's going to be a great weekend of college football. The last two weekends have been great. This next weekend's going to be great. Life is better when football's around.
You know what's nice is Aggies have a Friday night game, so we can actually watch all those.
Some people are opposed to the Friday night games. I love them because you get the win taken care of on Friday night, and then you wake up Saturday morning happy and ready to watch football all day long.
And then after that, you watch the Aggies in the NFL on Sunday. And that's the one I'm really starting to get excited about. We've got a couple players out there for the Aggies in the NFL that I expect really big seasons out of.
Did you guys watch a lot of NFL this weekend?
I did.
I did, pretty much. That's all I did Sunday, just kind of.
I woke up Sunday morning and did nothing but watch football. So it's there was a lot of, I mean, it was an incredible weekend for NFL as well. I feel like we've just been so spoiled with what football has done for us this year. There was almost, it seems like every single game, or at least a good portion of them, came down to within a touchdown and came down to last second drives. There was upsets, there was comebacks, there was everything this weekend in the NFL.
Yeah, and I think it's just going to keep getting better, to be honest. I think a couple of the teams that we've saw in week one, if they at least continue to show up, I'd love to see what this Jacksonville team could do if they actually continue to play the way they did against Green Bay. They lost, yes, but, I mean, there were times where Blake Bortles looked like a legit franchise quarterback, and that was a good receiving core, too. So,
I can attest to that. Also, you know, watching, you know, Derek Carr come in and go down to New Orleans and beat the Saints, That was a pretty good game too.
That was a very fun game,
especially if you got, you know, that was a good game to have fantasy players on because there was a lot of fantasy points on that.
I had both of the Saints starting wide receivers, so they each came out with 30 or more points for me. So I was happy about that game.
Yeah, that was a really good one. But here's a question for you guys. We saw afterwards you had that kind of controversy between Jack Del Rio and ESPN about, should they have gone for two? What's your take on that? Was Jack Del Rio right in going for two to win the game there at the end?
Why don't you ask BYU?
Oh.
Well, I can't talk. I went to Mountain Crest High School, who lost the state championship game because they went for two. I'm generally opposed to it, but you know what? It worked for the Raiders, and I can't knock them for that.
Well, since it's one of those things, since they did it and he got it, it was the right choice. If he would have taken that decision and they wouldn't have got it, it's the wrong choice.
Exactly.
It's just a toss of the coin, you know, on that one. But sometimes it takes guts to win a game, and because sometimes he may have thought that, you know, my guys are getting tired. I don't think they'll be able to do it in overtime. Because, you know, Drew Brees on the other end of that ball, you know what he can do. So.
Well, and they can't. It was a big come from behind. They were down at one point more than a couple of touchdowns. So I imagine, you know, coming back, putting all that energy forth towards a comeback, gotta wear you out. And by the end of the game, they're on the road. I can't blame anybody for not wanting to go to overtime on the road. And in the NFL, if you lose the first coin toss, that could be it. You might not even have a chance to put your offense on the field. So,
and that was true in the Chiefs game, too. They won the coin toss and just marched down the field.
After another huge come from behind. I don't know if you saw that game. That was something else. They were, I mean, San Diego came out looking like world beaters. And
they were winning like 21-3, same as last year. And then same as last year, also went on to lose the game.
Are the Chiefs just the ultimate come-from-behind team? Because last year they started out 1-5 and still made the playoffs.
I think Andy Reid just likes playing with people. He just likes to just make us think that they just are going to suck this year or suck in a game, and then he'll actually start to call a decent play.
That's got to be it. I mean,
that's the only logical explanation I have.
How do you go down 21-3 to the Chargers and then come back and win that game? It's incredible.
I think it's... That happens a lot with the, you know, with the Kansas City and San Diego. I think Kansas City just has their number for there, and he's just kind of, all right, well, we'll just kind of do some, check out some plays here for the first couple quarters, and then, all right, well, we'll kick it into gear now, and because he knows the other team and knows what to do and testing out stuff.
I'll tell you this, after this weekend, there is no division I'm more excited to watch than the AFC West, because you've got Denver, who went and pulled an upset. Well, I guess not an upset. Were they the favorite in that game against Carolina?
I don't think so.
I guess it was.
They were like the first Super Bowl winner, I think, to not be favored.
And taking a rookie quarterback who's never played a snap except for when he came in last year and took a knee. That was his only NFL snap, and he came in and beat a very good Carolina team. And then you've also got the Kansas City San Diego game with a 21 point swinger to finish that one out. And then you've got Oakland, who came from behind against New Orleans. That's incredible. That's a very good week for that division. I'm excited to watch how that plays out. You got four pretty solid teams in there.
So do you think the AFC West is the best division in the NFL, or do you think some other division is a little bit higher?
I think AFC for sure. I think it's the best. I think we might get two, maybe even get the both wild cards out of that division. I could see that happening.
I don't know if I'm ready to crown them the top. It'll be interesting to see.
I would say the only division I would say that's in that realm would probably be the AFC North. I mean, AFC even North. With the Cleveland Browns, you still have the Bengals, who were on pace to the first seed last year until Dalton got injured, and Steelers, Ravens, that was the first losing season they had in like 8 years or something like that, and I fully expect them to be back this year, and it looked like they would be back after that first game against the Bills. But like you said, I mean, AFC West, the one thing it has that AFC North doesn't have is everyone just has a high-flying offense, it seems, except for the Broncos, of course.
I'd say that they're going to be the funnest division to watch, and I agree, it'll be between them and the AFC North for which team is the best or which division's the best overall. But it's going to be a very good NFL season. I could just feel it in my bones, with so many good close games yesterday, so many upsets.
Is there a team in the conference or a division in the NFC that has like, you know, three legitimate teams, or are there just most of them just have two at most? If that,
I would say the NFC NFC North, maybe. I mean, kind of a little less so now that Bridgewater's out for the season. But I mean, the Lions looked pretty good against the Colts, at least on offense. The Vikings still won pretty handily against the Titans, and of course the Packers. I mean, never count out Aaron Rodgers, like ever. But
I wouldn't say that there's any division that has three legitimate playoff contenders in the NFC, but there's going to be a lot of close races, I think, in the NFC, because you got the NFC East, which is always, whether it's a train wreck or it's a very good division, it's always close, it seems. You got the NFC West, which is, you know, you're going to have a race between the Seahawks and the Cardinals there. And then the NFC South, which I think every team in that division is, well, I would say that the Saints, the Falcons, and the Buccaneers are going to be improved from last year. It's, you know, the Panthers aren't going to be likely to improve on what they did last year, but every team is going to be, I think, a solid team in there.
I would say probably each of those teams, except for the Panthers, I think they'll all probably be about 7-9. So I could see them continuing the playoffs until like week 13, but I don't think either of those teams, Saints, Buccaneers, or Falcons, have enough firepower on both sides of the ball to actually last an entire NFL season to get to the playoffs.
Did you watch Jameis Winston yesterday? He was something else.
Dude, I had Jameis Winston on my fantasy team. It was amazing.
Jameis Winston, he looks like a legitimate face of a franchise, future, potentially a future top five quarterback yesterday. I'm not going to go and make the prediction that he will be, but he looked very good. Almost, I wouldn't be surprised if his career takes a curve similar to Cam Newton's, where everyone knew he was good right from the beginning, but after 4 or 5 years, I think he could just take off and prove to be one of the best.
Yeah, I think it's really kind of shocking to look like how he started off his first two seasons. I mean, last year, we had that toilet bowl between the Titans and the Buccaneers, and he obviously lost that game to Mariota through several interceptions, and everyone was saying he was just going to be a bust. This year, he's thrown four touchdowns, and I don't know how many yards he had, but it was a pretty decent amount. Now everyone's saying he's the next big thing, and that's just lesson in overreactions, I guess, but I think you're right. Jameis Winston looks like the real deal. He got his accuracy issues down a little bit. He's got an arm, and he's finally got some weapons there in Tampa Bay as well. So
should be a good week. We got what's Sunday night football next week? It's the Packers and Vikings.
Yeah,
that'd be a good game. So big week for Aggie sports. All kinds of stuff going on. Again, they got the women's volleyball team will be in action Tuesday night against Utah Valley. It's on the road. The football team plays Friday night against Arkansas State. Women's tennis has got – women's and men's tennis are both playing tournaments this weekend. And women's soccer on Saturday against BYU. So we got all kinds of stuff going on. Oh, and the women's volleyball team playing again on Saturday against University of Utah. So all kinds of good stuff going on in Aggie sports. All kinds of stuff going on in professional sports. It's a good time to be alive.
Yeah, this next couple weeks is just going to be awesome because you got NFL and NCAAs now just getting underway. We've got MLB coming down to the playoffs, like we said. We've got MLS coming down to the playoffs. We got basketball's going to be starting up here pretty soon. Hockey.
It's hard to beat the fall. Yeah.
We can't ask for anything more.
The only thing make it better, is we had some March Madness here, but it's not March, so that won't work.
Can we change that? Can we make it October Madness?
Let's have a madness for every month of the year or something. But
once we expand the college football playoff, it'll be even better. But we'll leave that for another discussion.
Yeah, that's a can of worms there. But.
Well, anyways, thanks for tuning in. We're going to be shooting this podcast weekly, try and have one out every week. Usually keep them right about an hour long. You can find us on Twitter. We are at @bearded_Aggies. I'm pretty sure our picture is still an egg, so don't be thrown off by that. We haven't posted anything up there yet, but we're going to get that going. Be posting out all kinds of Utah State news, national stories. We're going to try and find some things that aren't talked about by ESPN and bring them to light in future podcasts. And
if you want us talking about something in future podcasts, you have a question that you want us to kind of answer, tweet us there. Find us on campus too, maybe. We'd love to have some interaction with fans, with anybody who wants to talk sports with us.
And we're gonna hopefully be able to get some interviews set up here in the next few weeks and get this thing rolling. So thank you for tuning in today. Once again, I'm here with Trevor Porath, Daniel Hansen, I'm Jaden Johnson, and we are 2.5 Beards.